to wish you a very happy Friday and a very happy 4th of July as well, since that one is when this program is going to be aired. I hope all of you are planning on having a great Lord's Day this weekend, getting together with your brothers and sisters in Christ. Everybody needs a home church, and everybody needs to be at that home gathering on a regular basis to encourage each other to love and good deeds. If you don't have a place, you need to find one ASAP. And if you're actively looking right now and you're within driving distance of the Elkhart East building, why don't you come on over, check us out, and maybe you can stick around with us. Fridays, I also like to say thank you to those who are supporting Into the Word to keep it on the air right here on this radio station. Thank you. We appreciate it. God bless you for it. Let's go ahead and open to Joshua chapter number 11. And I want to go all the way back to verse 1, just so that we've got the background before we push forward from here, contextually. This is, I think, happening in the second year of Israel's time in the Promised Land. The third year. The first year, I think, was when they took Jericho and Ai and had their blessing and cursing ceremony up at Shechem. Second year, I think, is when the Gibeonites became allies by deception at first with the Israelis. And so a southern alliance of Canaanites attacked the Gibeonites, and the Israelis responded and basically just wiped out all of that allied army. Then the third year is what I think we're seeing right here, when it says, Yabin, king of Hazor, heard of this, heard of everything that had happened the previous fighting year. He sent to Jobab, king of Madon, to the king of Shimron, to the king of Aksaph, and to the kings who were in the northern hill country. Basically, we're talking about Galilee with that. And the Arabah, south of Kinnereth. Kinnereth is the Sea of Galilee, and the Arabah is the upper Jordan Valley south of the Sea of Galilee. And then in the lowland, that's down by the Mediterranean coast, and in Naphoth Dor, and in the west, and to the Canaanites in the east and the west, the Amorites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Jebusites in the hill country, the Hivites under Hermon. Hermon is that great big mountain to the north of the waters of Merom, north of the upper Jordan Valley, and who were in the land of Mizpah. They came out with all their troops, a great horde in number like the sand that is on the seashore, with very many horses and chariots. And all these kings joined their forces. They came and they encamped together at the waters of Merom to fight against Israel. And so this, I believe, is the third year in the very early spring. That's when wars get started, typically in this time period. This is a much larger alliance than the one in the south. This is a great deal of people. Plus, they have high-tech Egyptian chariots and horses pulling those chariots. These are advanced weapons platforms. They have a lot of flat land up in the north with valleys, river valleys, that are wide. And so this is a very threatening alliance. But God has already told Joshua to call out the Israeli militia from Gilgal, down at the very entry point of their coming into the Promised Land, and they are already north of the Sea of Galilee, getting ready to engage this huge alliance. So they're not afraid of them, not in the sense that they're trying to stay away from them. They are actually being the ones that will do the first attacking. So he who is said to Joshua, don't be afraid of them. Tomorrow at this time, I'll give over them slain to Israel. And you shall hamstring their horses and burn their chariots with fire. So you're going to do away with their high-tech weapons platforms. So Joshua, all his warriors, came suddenly against them by the waters of Merom and fell upon them. Waters of Merom is the Hula wetland that you can find on an Israeli map today. It's actually just to the east of Tel Hatzor, the place where the big king Yabin was located. And so he's really gathering the people together near his power base. And so we end up with a rout supernaturally of these forces. Verse 10, after he turned back at that time and captured Hatzor, so he'd already beaten them. Actually, I skipped a couple of verses here. Verse 18, he who is gave them into the hand of Israel, who struck them, chased them as far as Great Sidon and Misrephoth Mayim. That's north of the Hula wetland, probably 20-some miles, I think, is where we're talking about. And they end up splitting the groups that are running away. Some of them go toward the northwest, toward Sidon, and the others go east or maybe northeast into a little valley, a little pocket in the foothills of Mount Hermon. That pocket is called the Valley of Mizpah. It's a little ways north of Dan, apparently. And so they struck them until he'd left none of them remaining. And Joshua did to them just as he had said to them, to him, he hamstrung their horses, burned their chariots with fire. So they don't take and use any of these high-tech weapons platforms. Israel remains a foot soldier force, a militia, because it's the power of God that gives them the victory, not high-tech weaponry. Then, verse 10, and this is kind of where we left off last session. Joshua turned back at that time. He captured Hatzor. So he takes over this massive city, this walled city, which didn't have many defenders left in it because everybody had been out preparing for the invasion of the Israeli encampment to the south. So after they took it, they struck its king with the sword, for Hatzor was formerly the head of all those kingdoms. So Yabin is executed. They struck with the sword all who were in it, devoting them to destruction. There was none left that breathed. And then he burned Hatzor with fire. And I shared with you that when I visited Hatzor, I was really excited to see the burn layer, because it is exactly at the chronological level, and it's been dated right around 1400 BC, that is within a handful or a double handful of years of what we're talking about here in the chronology I've been using for the destruction of Hatzor. So when I see that, and sometimes I post it and talk to people about it, I say, that's the Joshua burn layer. Joshua did that. Verse 12, and then all the cities of those kings and all their kings, Joshua captured and struck them with the edge of the sword, devoting them to destruction, just as Moses, the servant of He Who Is, had commanded. So then we see, in just a matter of words here, a description of this third year of military campaigning. And it's all over the north. All the cities, all the regions that were listed at the beginning of this chapter, Joshua takes the Israeli militia army to all those different places as a follow-up. He's already destroyed the majority of their military people. He goes to all their cities now, and anybody that is still there trying to defend that city, they are killed, they are executed, the city is broken into, and their stuff is taken. But we do have a note here. Verse 13, none of the cities that stood on mounds did Israel burn except Hazor alone. That Joshua burned. So the burn layer at Hazor is unique. All these other big walled cities, Joshua just broke into them, trashed them, plundered them, executed any defending population that was left, and then he just abandoned it, just left it. Now, what did he have in mind? Probably that once they finished in this big, quick sweep of the land, and they started dividing the territory up in the inheritance to the different tribal groups, that the tribal groups would go back in and finish taking those cities and rebuilding them and using them for themselves. But Hazor, because it was the instigator of this alliance, it got burnt. Verse 14, all the spoil of these cities and the livestock the people Israel took for their plunder, but every person they struck with the edge of the sword until they had destroyed them, and they did not leave any who breathed. Now, I'm going to make an assertion here. We're talking about those that tried to stay, the defenders, the people who ran away and found some place to hide out far away from their home city. They survive. And they, we will find out as we push forward with this history, they eventually start coming back and reestablishing themselves in some of these places. And it's that group that we see mentioned as causing so much trouble, starting in the book of Judges and then in the book of 1 Samuel. Because Israel, the second phase of living in the Promised Land, they didn't follow through. They did not clear out the returning Canaanites. Back to the text. Just as he who is had commanded Moses, his servant, so Moses commanded Joshua, and so Joshua did. He left nothing undone of all that he who is had commanded Moses. And so then we have a summary of what has happened during these campaigns of the first 3 years, I believe, they were in Israel. So Joshua took all that land, the hill country, and typically that's talking about the central core of Canaan that is higher than any place else, and all the Negeb. The Negeb is the southern desert region below the hill country of what will be the land of Judah. All the land of Goshen. Now that can be a little confusing because they came from the land of Goshen in Egypt. The name Goshen just by itself, let's see, let me check my notes here real quick. Goshen means the place of drawing near, something like that. So this is the name of a place in Canaan, and it seems to be part of the Negeb, a region to the south and west of the hill country of what will be Judah territory. And then the lowland, the Shephelah, this is the transition area between the hill country and the Mediterranean coastline. It's somewhat hilly and has entrances to some of the valleys of the drainage wadis. And then the Arabah. The Arabah is the dry region all along the Dead Sea and then most of the Jordan Valley heading north. And so they took that as well. The hill country of Israel and its lowland, from Mount Halek, which rises towards Seir. We don't know for sure where Mount Halek is, but it seems to be in the south, probably not far from oh my goodness, from I have a total blank that I just drew on this. The southern entry point for Israel into the Promised Land originally. But that's in the south, going as far as Baal Gad. That seems to be a mountain a little bit north of Dan, the city of Dan as we know it today, in the valley of Lebanon below Mount Hermon. So we know where Mount Hermon is. We know where the Valley of Lebanon is, because now we call it the Baca Valley. It's between the Lebanon and Anti-Lebanon mountains. And so Baal Gad seems to be a prominent hill or mountain in the south part of the Baca Valley. So what we just saw described is the north-to-south extension of the victories of Joshua from way down in the south, where he took the areas in the desert during his campaign, all the way up to the north to the Baca Valley. Okay, back to the text. He captured all their kings, he struck them, put them to death. Joshua made war a long time with all those kings. Now, long time here is probably to be understood in an idea of several years, because we've already got 3 years under the belt, and I believe that we'll have at least another 3 years of operations to kind of solidify all of that work. Verse 19. There was not a city that made peace with the people of Israel except the Hivites, the inhabitants of Gibeon. We already know about them. They took all of them in battle. So everywhere except the cities of the Gibeonites, the cities of Canaan were taken by conquest, by battle. For it was he who is his doing to harden their hearts that they should come against Israel in battle, in order that they should be devoted to destruction and should receive no mercy but be destroyed, just as he who has commanded Moses. It is important to understand, God had told Abraham 500-600 years before this that the sins of the Amorites, a synonym at that time for the Canaanite peoples, that the sins of the Amorites were not yet full. They had not yet come to their climax. And so Israel was going to end up going to Egypt and then coming back. And then they would be used by God to evict or execute the Canaanites, who have by that time blown off several centuries of opportunity for repentance that God had granted them. But instead of getting better, they just got worse. And so God is now working out judgment against them, as described here in verse number 20 of chapter 11 in the book of Joshua. Now, the next few verses here at the end of chapter 11 is a summary of some events that are coming up. So I'm going to skip over it at this point. We'll come back to it later. Chapter 12 says, "Now these are the kings of the land whom the people of Israel defeated and took possession of their land beyond the Jordan toward the sunrise. From the valley of the Arnon to Mount Hermon." So that's on the east side, from the south, northern border of Moab, all the way up to Mount Hermon, with all of the Arabah eastward. So that's from the Jordan eastward, probably to the King's Highway of ancient times, the King's trade route. the Sihon, king of the Amorites, who lived in Heshbon and ruled over Aroer, which is on the edge of the valley of Arnon. Arnon is one of the wadis or the river systems that drains into the upper basin of the Dead Sea. And from the middle of the valley as far as the river Yabuk, that's to the north of the Dead Sea, about midway, actually it's more like two-thirds of the way down from the Sea of Galilee, this Yabuk River drains into the Jordan River. And so the boundary of the Amorites, that is half of Gilead, and then the Arabah to the Sea of Kinneret. Kinneret is another name for the Sea of Galilee, eastward, in the direction of Beth Jeshimoth to the Sea of the Arabah, the Salt Sea, southward to the foot of the slopes of Pisgah. So that just described how Sihon lost all of his territory on the east side of the Jordan, the southern half of that. The northern half is then described in the next verses, and I'm not going to read every last bit of it. It had originally belonged to Og, the king of Bashan. And so all of that is taken. Verse 6, Moses, the servant of He Who Is, and the people of Israel defeated them. Moses, the servant of He Who Is, gave their land for a possession to the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half-tribe of Manasseh. So all of that happened in year 40 of the Exodus. Then what comes up next, and I'm not going to read every bit of this, is what happened in years 1, 2, and 3 of Joshua's time in Canaan. And so it says here, these are the kings of the land whom Joshua and the people of Israel defeated on the west side of the Jordan, from Baal Gad in the valley of Lebanon to Mount Halek that rises towards Seir. Joshua gave their land to the tribes of Israel's possession according to their allotments in the hill country, the lowland, the Arabah, the slopes, the wilderness, the Negeb, the land of the Hittites, Amorites, Canaanites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And then it starts listing all of the city-state main cities that have just been destroyed or broken in the stories we just read. And we start with Jericho, then we go to Ai, and then we start listing them all one by one until we come down to the bottom. In verse 23, it says there were 31 kings, 31 city-states that Joshua defeats in a matter of 3 years, I believe. So we've got 4 years, because we include the operations of Moses on the east side. So in a four-year time period, all of these kings have been destroyed. 31 kings on the east, the west side, and 2 kings on the west side. They're all done. And it's starting to get ready for them to divvy up this property, so that each tribe can go in and not just simply let the Canaanites come back and live as neighbors to them. They're supposed to go in and do the mop-up operations. That's what's supposed to happen next. Now, chapter 13, we're going to have to have some additional information come in after we have this introduction of what's still left. Chapter 13, now Joshua was old and advanced in years. Now how old is he? If the tradition of the Israelis is correct, and I think it's pretty close, Joshua was judging in the land of Canaan for 25 years. And he died at 110. And so if we are correct that this is now about the seventh year, and I think we're about to see some information to indicate that, then Joshua is probably right around 88. And that makes him about 3 years older than his buddy Caleb. So all of that seems to match. And so I like using the traditional figures of the Israelis for his age. He and Caleb definitely are just over 20 years older than the oldest of the leaders in Israel at this time. So they are definitely markedly older. So God says to him, you are old and advanced in years. Not that he's decrepit, but that you're just a lot older than the other guys. And there remains yet very much land to possess. So they've broken the Canaanite power base in this operation that Joshua has been overseeing, but they haven't occupied the territories. This is the land that yet remains. All the regions of the Philistines, that's along the south west coastline of the Promised Land, where the Gaza Strip is today. Just expand that a little bit larger to the north and toward the east, and that's the land of the Philistines. All those of the Geshurites from the Sihor, which is east of Egypt, north to the boundary of Ekron. Basically, it's just another region right next to the Philistine territory. It's just a little bit to the east and southeast from the Philistine territory. All of this is counted as Canaanite. There are five rulers of the Philistines: Gaza, Ashdod, Ashkelon, Gath, and Ekron, and those of the Avivim in the south. And all in the land of the Canaanites, the Merarah that belongs to the Sidonians, to Aphek, now we're up in the north, along the Mediterranean coastline. All of that is still occupied. So Joshua did not go in and break the power base in those areas. That's going to be left to those that follow him. But that's another story for another day when we get into the Word.